1, 2, 3, car!
Ranking the Beatles.
It's our podcast show.
Ranking the Beatles.
Everywhere we go,
ranking the Beatles.
Ranking all night long,
ranking the Beatles.
224 songs, ranking the Beatles. Beatles. Yes. Very nice. The little horn interlude.
Thank you.
Well done.
Sometimes I like to contribute on to your songs.
I like it. We're a partnership. I love it. I love it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 117 of Ranking the Beatles. Hope you're all doing lovely. My name is Jonathan. Over here to my left, as always, is the lovely Julia. How are you, my dear?
Hi, I'm pretty good.
Wonderful. It's good to see you. It's been a busy couple of weeks. I feel like I've barely seen you.
It has been busy. Also, I've been sick. Yeah. So hopefully I can make it through this whole episode without coughing.
And now I've got whatever you had or some semblance of it.
I feel like you didn't get it from me.
Which is why I've got this sultry, low, sexy voice.
That's not sultry.
Jeez. Hurt a man's feelings. Why don't you?
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. But yeah, it's good to be back, everybody. Hope everyone's still thoroughly enjoying Now and Then, all the new Beatledom stuff that's going on. The red and blue reissues, sounding great, sounding weird in some places. It's a journey. It's a blast.
It's just like different from what you're used to.
Yes. And different's fine. The old stuff hasn't gone away.
No.
It's not disappeared. It's still there if that's what you like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just new ways of listening. So, but yeah, gang, I am excited about our episode today. Julia, are you excited?
I am.
I would think so. Our guest this week is one of our favorite singers and songwriters. He first came on the scene nationally out of Boston in the 90s as the face of the Candy Butchers and then as a solo artist. He's also, these days, an in-demand producer and songwriter, working with acts such as Panic at the Disco, Mandy Moore, Fall Out Boy, Jenny Lewis, and more. He's also known for his musical work in film, including Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story, and most notably as the voice behind the song That Thing You Do from the film That Thing You Do. His most recent album is this year's Paul McCarthy, which we highly recommend that you pick up or stream wherever you get quality music.
Or and any of his albums.
They're all good.
Like, literally, just pick one and dive in if you haven't before. If you have, give it a revisit.
Yeah. And this is his second time on the show, so we are super stoked to have him back here with us. Friends, please welcome to the show Mike Viola. Mike, welcome back to Ranking the Beatles, man. How's it going?
Going great, man. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Likewise, likewise. You've been super busy since we last talked, which was in 2021. It doesn't feel that long ago, but time is so weird now. You've been super busy. You've put out the Paul McCarthy record this year. You've been on multiple tours. How's all that been? How's the response been? It seems like you've been loving everything lately.
Yeah, it's true. I just I got involved working with this band Panic at the Disco, and I started basically this guy Brendan Urie, who's the architect, mastermind, star of that band, right? He wanted to make a rock record, and just somehow found Godmuffin and the American Egypt, and really liked those albums, and asked his manager, like, his manager's like, "What are you listening to?" And he's like, "Well, you know, I'm listening to something you probably never heard of. It's this guy, Mike Viola. It's just like indie stuff." He's like, I know him. We know that. We can put you together with him." So they kind of put us together. And basically, we started playing rock music together. And it was he's a lot younger than me. And so I was making these references that he didn't really even know what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, wow. And so we were showing each other stuff, you know, like he was showing me new rock, I was showing him old rock. And this just got me playing music again, like really playing music, like, and you know, like, and we kind of formed a band, me, him, and the co-producer, co-writer, Jake Sinclair, and made his record. And then when we finished making his record, we just didn't want to stop hanging out because we were a band, you know what I mean? And so that's how Paul McCarthy happened, was like, because I had all these other songs, like Diamonds of New York was left over. Other shit that's on the next record. There's a couple songs on the on Paul McCartney that were just left over from, you know, God Muffin stuff I didn't finish or whatever. So I just finished them up. And yeah, and it really, the reception of the record was just like, wow, he finally made a record, you know, that's like kind of focused.
Yeah.
Because my records, you know, tend to be like a guy in a room, like very Rammy or like something, anything, you know, Todd Rundgren, like a guy in a room, like he's just doing his thing, you know. And those records are fun to make, but it, to make an album that was like something I could really tour, and it felt really bandy, was something I hadn't done since Candy Butchers, quite frankly. So yeah, man, it's been a bit of a, I call it my, my act four, you know. It's like, act four of my whole thing. And, it really came as a surprise. And then to take it on the road and to have people really dig in the show and coming to the show and me being able to just like hit these chords, like, you know, in 200 capacity clubs, like just staring at the lights and getting lost in the sound with all these people. It's just the best thing ever.
Yeah.
It's like, my brain is like, we're doing it.
That's great.
And thankfully, just to wrap it all up, because I could talk forever about how excited I am about music, but like, my wife and my kids are so supportive of me doing it, because they see like a more complete picture of who I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's fantastic.
I'm not always the guy. Yeah. I'm not always the guy like writing songs or like recording them in my weird little studio that I'm in now, but also a guy that likes to connect with people and sing live. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway,
that's, man, that's so good. I'm so glad to hear that, you know, 'cause like your records are so good. And as long as I've kind of followed your career, live performance never seemed like the biggest part of it for you. So like, I'm stoked to see you back out there. I think a couple of friends of ours went and saw you, one in New York and one in Boston, that we like, they talked about you through the podcast, and they were like, oh crap, we're going to go see him. You know? And so like, I think they really dug it. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's so great to hear.
Yeah.
Well, there's more coming because I just love it so much. I'm not, you know, I don't see any reason not to do it.
Yeah. Now this tour you're doing in the winter is like a solo tour, right? You're going out just by yourself.
Yeah. So it'll be fun. 'Cause I have songs that, you know, are leaning more towards that. And I don't know. I like to talk. I like to tell stories. I like to hear stuff from people, and you know, I like to make shit up on the spot. It'll be fun to be in that situation where it's just me.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to ask, 'cause when you announced the Paul McCartney record, you know, it wasn't too long after we had talked and done our last podcast episode. And, you know, we talked about Your Mother Should Know. And we talked a lot about McCartney in that episode. And I don't want to take the credit and think that our conversation made you think of Paul McCartney to name to write a song called Paul McCartney. I will take any credit you give, though. But what was kind of the, I've been dying to know, like, what was the kind of impetus behind that song? Because it's not filled with like Beatle cliches or anything that you would like kind of suspect a song like that might be, but I've been super curious to know like what the origin of that song is.
There's an, you know, a visual artist, Paul McCartney, who I love. Mm-hmm. And, when I first moved to New York and I was, you know, just straight out of like Boston and the suburbs of Boston and just a defensive kind of like blue collar, came from blue collar upbringing and defensive about, all the like higher education kids that I was meeting in New York, and just sort of like more punk rock, I guess I was more that way than what I was, the people I was meeting. But like, I really responded to this artist, Paul McCartney. And I met a girl that we were going to these museums and stuff. And, now I'm married to her. And, she introduced me to Paul McCartney's stuff, you know, and I just responded to his material. And I don't know, I'm not totally 100% sure where the why I made the decision. I just thought it was really funny to have it, you know. And I started the song, and it was like when I joined the Beatles, you know. And and the music was way different than what it ended up being. I rewrote the music to that maybe four times, you know.
Oh, wow.
Because I just thought it was such a cool idea, and I wanted the idea of like a fifth Beatle. Like, you know, there's a, people always talking about like the fifth Beatle. It's like a cliche, you know? And I was like, well, what if the fifth Beatle was Paul McCartney? How weird would that be? It'd be so weird, right? And right. So I was thinking about
when I joined the Beatles, I wasn't afraid of them. We played City Field, we played Shea Stadium, we dropped a bomb of love uranium. Through time, circadians, white flag waving from the Plaza Hotel. Teenagers screaming in a cloud of seagull. My head was bleeding. Someone was ringing a bell. Pick up that Hofner. Tell me how it
And then it just, and I was doing a lot of mushrooms at the time, and then it kind of just got onto the psychedelic tip, and really embracing that, and it's led me to this whole course that I think is really kind of special, and so yeah, I worked really hard on it, but it was all stream of consciousness, if that makes, you know, yeah. I just going at it again. But I never like was like, what does this mean? You know?
Yeah.
It really is stream of consciousness. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Cause you know, I feel like unless you know that that's where you're coming from with it, you know, it's almost not to say, you know, not to make it sound like a Beatle thing, but it's like, you sit there going, what is he singing about? Like, what is he talking about? Like, what is this storyline? Yeah. And as a listener, it's so enthralling because you're just trying to tap into what it's about, but it's kind of like I'm the Walrus, where you're like, oh, it's just stream of consciousness. Like, that's so cool. I love that.
Yeah. It is a lot like that type of song, or that type of poetry, those type of books, you know, that just, you kind of take from it what you bring to it in a way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have already talked about, you've got another record that's already done and ready to go, or you write like constantly, it seems like.
I'm constantly working on music, and I just love doing it, you know. And so I have another album that's just about done. I wrote a few more songs over the summer, so I kind of like, I'm knocking the other. You know, I'm trying to like beat songs and stuff. I have a couple more months before I have to deliver anything, so to like get it pressed, for vinyl, and, set a release date. But it's going to come out in the fall of 2024. So
nice.
I'm very, very excited. Yeah. And there'll be another world. It's actually a world tour, believe it or not, in 2024. We're calling it that for fun.
Right.
But we're doing like, you know, the UK, we're doing Europe, Japan. So, you know, it's kind of a world
tour. That is the world.
That counts.
Thank you.
It totally counts.
Totally counts, right? Oh my God.
We went to Atlanta a couple weeks ago to see, you remember the Marvelous Three, Butch Walker's band?
Oh, of course. Yeah,
they,
of course.
They did a reunion show. They did three in Atlanta and two in Chicago, and they had a t-shirt that was like your like cliche like 80s like hair metal tour shirt, and the back was like world tour sold out, and it was just 5 dates.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's
nice.
That's so Butch. That's so Butch.
Yeah. So gearing up for this solo acoustic thing, because we are talking about a song today that's kind of solo acoustic from Paul, you know, I'm curious, as a performer for you and as a songwriter, you know, you talked a little bit about kind of the difference between live bands and a live show with a band and a live show acoustic. I was wondering if you could kind of like expand on that a bit. You know, what do you get as a performer? What do you hope to deliver as an artist in a live show with that's just you versus with the band. Because it's the kind of thing I always kind of wonder why McCartney doesn't do something similar. And granted, like for him, he could probably do the same thing in stadiums and arenas if he just went by himself.
Yeah.
But, you know, like what do you get from that that you don't with a full band? And what do you try to deliver to the listener?
Well, first of all, it's a lot more demanding. Like of your ability, not so much of your energy, but your ability. So, cause you're super exposed, you know? And so it's a lot more demanding in that demand, like the kind, what it does to your creative flow, is unparalleled, you know, because it puts you in a space of constantly, you need to be on top of it, you know, need to be on top of your ability, if that all makes sense. Like, because if you lose your voice on the road with the band, you can just, you know, you tell the sound guy, duck my voice a little bit, whatever. Or if, you know, if the sound is shitty on stage or whatever, like if you can just kind of power through it, you know. Or adjust with the band, with other people. Like, I don't know. It's easier if you have the right band, which I'm very fortunate with the players I play with. I play with a lot of different musicians, but they're all just like, they're so understanding of that component, which is like, you know, mixing yourself on stage, you know what I mean? Like that's an important thing that you learn over time. But anyway, when you're by yourself, you know, you're just hanging out there, you know? So, but why I like it so much is that, you know, the tempo can be completely different. If I feel like lowering the key, I can just change things really quickly, extend stuff, you know? And there's something about the vocal is like, you know, everybody can hear it.
Yeah.
So you sing it a different way, I think. Mm-hmm. You gotta go deeper inside. Because you're not like playing all these riffs and, you know, conscious of the fact that like you don't want to just stand there, like not like a jump around on stage, but like you move a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't help it. You're all jacked up. But like, yeah, when you're acoustic, I think it truly is more intimate for those reasons, you know? Yeah. And I get a lot out of it. And I'm able to play songs, like take requests, you know, which you can't really do when you're with a band.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes I ham fist my way through stuff.
Yeah.
Or the band does because they don't know the songs. But I think for that reason, I really love it. You can really connect to the listener in a way that you can't when you're playing with the band, because the whole band connects with the listener.
Yeah.
But when it's you, it's just you and your songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it, man. This is I'm super excited for you with this tour coming up. You know, hopefully it's something that you do more of these shows and more of the solo shows. We'd love to see one, you know, hopefully.
I have the email saved in my inbox so I can go back and look at the dates and see when we're free.
Nice.
Because something pops up. You never come to visit us in New Orleans, so we're going to have to travel to see you.
Right.
That's amazing. You know, I'm trying so hard. I think the way that we got to do it is that I go to the markets that I've been to first. Mm-hmm. People are there. And then you start to take, so the run I'm doing in the winter of 2024, it's like, yeah, I haven't been to Florida since 97. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah.
With my show, I've been there with other bands, but, yeah. So I don't know who's going to be there.
Yeah.
We'll see.
If you're in Florida, go to that show. Florida listeners.
Yeah, that's right.
Same favor.
Nice.
Yeah.
Man, well, we will we'll be sure to link all the dates, or at least put a link to all the dates in our show notes and everything, so listeners can see where you're going and go check it out.
Great, great, great. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you know, we are talking about a White Album song this week, and before we get to that, though, I did want to ask, because it's kind of the topic of the week for, I guess, or of the month for Beatle people, have you heard the new Beatles song, Now and Then? What are your thoughts on it? What are your thoughts on releasing songs like this? I mean, there's a whole lot to unpack with this song these days.
No, it's such a hard one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm on a text chain like you probably are with people just like, you know, slinging mud and whatever about it. Or like, you know, have you heard the new Stones record too? And like all this stuff. It's just, I'm just happy people make music, you know? Yeah. I don't I mean, I heard the song for the first time. I resisted the, I waited until I could hear it on the radio.
Yeah.
So I didn't listen to it until it was broadcast on, like KCRW, which is our NPR station here in LA. And it was like, you know, in the morning when I'm making lunch for my kid, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. You know? So I heard it on the radio for the first time and it sounded great. Yeah. I loved it. And especially the beginning, you know, when it's just John, it sounds unbelievable. And then it gets kind of cheesy, of course, because it's just cheesy weirdness, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know. I'm kind of into it. I have friends that are so against it. I think that's just a waste of energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's a cash grab. I'm like, whatever. It's like,
what are you grabbing at?
I think what people mean is like, it's like the executives around mm-hmm. Paul and Ringo. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Okay. Fair enough. But so, you know what else is a cash grab? The Smile box set I bought with the store of Smile, like with the light blinking.
Yep.
Yes. that was a complete ripoff, but I bought it.
I had to have it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, whatever. It's all cash grab stuff. I get it. But what about the song? You know, and I really love the melody. I love the, all the cadences. The bridge is weird, but I don't know. How about, do you like it?
I do. You know, I was, I heard the demo a few times, you know, cause it's been floating around YouTube for years. And, you know, one, I was just blown away by what they achieved sonically with it. Like that was really fantastic. I think the editorial decisions that were made were really smart. There's mm-hmm. a bridge section that they cut out that I think wasn't developed. So they just said, let's not try to squeeze anything unnecessary out of it. But I really do like it. I think the melodies that are there are really strong. The parts are cool. Like if you listen within like 6 hours, there were isolation tracks on YouTube, which is wild.
It's crazy. Yeah. You can do that now.
And McCartney's bass part is really, really cool. You know, Ringo's pretty steady on it. Just kind of basic, you know, not much he can do because the track was already pretty much there. On the whole, like I really like it. I don't know how it'll age for me. I'm curious to see. I think kind of like you, what I really love most about it is like, it's just put a smile on people's faces for the last week. Yeah. And like, that's great.
Yeah. He's got people talking about the Beatles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if they're arguing, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, I was, you know, 15 or whatever when the anthology came out, and I was like the weird kid who was 15 and like loved the Beatles, and none of my peers were kind of into the same thing. And so I was looking for people desperately to talk to about this and had nobody.
Right.
And now I'm like, there's all, like no one 15 does not like, no one has that problem now. Like you can find your tribe to nerd out about this stuff wherever you look. And that's like a beautiful thing for people like that. So I'm super happy about it.
I agree. You know, I agree. And it provoked a lot of questions. Like my daughter asked me a million, she's 11.
Yeah.
And she knows John is dead. She knows George is dead. She gets that. But was super confused by the video that came out.
So are we.
She's confused by it. She's like, why would they do that? She just thought it was really creepy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, it is creepy. But, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
I still watched it.
Like,
I think when you played the video, didn't I just scream, oh, no.
What's your reaction when Ghost John and Ghost George show up?
Yeah, I think the parts where they like sort of played like old video of them like clowning around and stuff like video clips.
Yeah,
That's really sweet. I think that's lovely. It's like showing them having fun and being youthful. Yeah. But then like the weird superimposed.
Yeah, when it's
I was
like
no, yeah. no, that you made it weird.
In the fact that like. There's like footage out there in the world of McCartney, like just playing a lot, like acting like he's playing with the Beatles. Like that bothers me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just, yeah. It's weird.
One thing to have like footage of George and, in John that they took from something and superimposed on it.
Yeah.
But it's just really strange and a bummer to me. Now I guess I'm going to get negative.
Yeah.
It's a bummer that like those guys found it necessary, or they agreed to be like, yeah, sure, we'll... Like John's, I mean, Paul's me with this. He's like,
he's got the headphones.
I mean, it's like, and it's so embarrassing. I'm like,
yeah.
Like,
as the youths would say, like, cringe.
Yeah, it's kind of cringe. Yeah,
super cringe. You know, I have no problem with the music, you know, and people making whatever kind of music they want. Like, mm-hmm. cool, I want to hear it. You know, but the video stuff is. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's awful.
And the thing that I keep saying about it is like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not into the Beatles necessarily for their music videos. Hmm. Like the ones that are great are, that's a super cool perk, but 99.8% of the time I'm listening to the music without visual accompaniment, you know? So
for sure.
Will I watch it again? Sure. Probably not. Do I truly care? Nah, it's fine. Like got a great song out of it. And I love that.
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. The White Album, you know, I know you were talking a few minutes ago about making kind of schizophrenic records on your own, and few records are as schizophrenic as the White Album. Are you a White Album fan? What's your take on the White Album?
Huge fan. I love the White Album.
Yeah.
I love the White Album. My take on it is that like, it's a kind of a therapy record or something, you know, like, it's like Brian died, you know, there's like, they were orphaned. And no one was going to say no. Like George Martin was even checked out. Like everybody, they were doing the album. And separately, you know, and I know there's all this animosity and people quit and stuff was happening, but I feel like also the separateness happened maybe as a result of just having to squirrel away and figure your scene out, you know, on your own, you know, maybe some of it was that, but I'm a huge fan of the record.
Do you remember like your first listen to it or your first exposure to it, like any kind of take from that? Because I remember being thoroughly confused because I mean just I was young, it was on cassette, and it just said the Beatles, you know, and I didn't know they didn't look like they did on the other cassette that I just saw. And I didn't know why it was two cassettes, because I didn't know a double album was even a thing. And then musically, it was just kind of like a, what the fuck is happening throughout the whole thing? And I was young when I first heard it. I was really young. So it really took me for a big
loop. Like younger than 10 or like?
Probably, yeah.
Younger than 15?
Yeah.
So younger
when
than
you
10,
first
yeah,
heard
yeah,
it.
Pretty young.
Yeah.
I was... let's see. I was really, really young as well, but I'm also older than you. So it, you know, I think I heard it in the 70s, like in the mid 70s.
Yeah.
Cause when the Manson trials were going on and when that book came out, the Bugliosi book, mm-hmm. Helter Skelter, about the Manson trial and about this whole, you know, thing he made up about why Charles Manson did what he did and got the family to do what they did. While that was happening, it was in the mainstream. So it was in the news. It was like the Vietnam War and Charles Manson and the Beatles breaking up. And it was like this whole, all that stuff was happening around the same time. And Paul McCartney getting busted for weed and like all this stuff was in the mainstream. So the White Album to me was like a lot of it had to do, I was confused about the record. It seemed really dark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really dark to me because of the Charles Manson stuff. Because, you know, do you know that book? You know what I'm talking about?
I read that. I must have been like fifth grade or something. I think it was because I had gotten into the Beatles and heard about that association and then read the book and was terrified about what I read. And it cast a pall over that record for me, like you're saying. Like it made the whole record seem really dark. Yeah.
Like imagine being a kid
and
having – it come at you this at the same time. So it was synonymous with the White Album because I was just a kid, right? So I couldn't be like, well, the White Album's art and it clearly happened. I mean, according to my records, it happened months, you know, whatever. It had nothing. It was just all one big glob. And the Charles Manson had something to do with the White Album.
Yeah.
Like when I was growing up. And it took years for me to rip the tear away the two things
yeah
to separate the two things
for sure.
Really, it took me a long time to realize and to read more about it and like, oh, that wasn't even real. Like Bugliosi, the DA, like made that up. Like it had nothing to do. Wow. Yeah. Like that was all made up. So once I learned all that, I was able to really just hear the record but I always thought it was related. So, you know, I thought they knew Manson. Like I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They had beards and long hair.
Could be part of the Manson family.
Totally. And my mother was a Sunday school teacher, and Jesus Christ looked exactly like that too. You know what I mean?
This is all very confusing.
So I'd pour through the Bible, like, and I'd be like, look at this guy's like, he's part of the middle. He like looks like Paul McCartney. You know what I mean? Like it was everybody. So it was all one glob for me, and it was a dark, sexy glob mm-hmm. of death and genius and danger and nighttime. So the Beatles, the White Album was like a real dark record for me. And then as I got older and it came out on cassette in the 80s, they released this it was called Past Masters or something. Like they went back to the UK versions of all the albums mm-hmm. and they create a version for the US and they put it out on vinyl and cassette. And I had both of those. And this was in the 80s. And I just devoured the Beatles over again, you know, all over again. And just to pause for a second, that was a cash grab.
Right.
But, yeah. You know what I'm saying? But that product I was able to buy the Beatles records.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. And have them in my car and like pick through the cassettes, much like you did as a kid. Like, and at that point I was like, oh my God, there's just so much like Martha, my dear, like mm-hmm. that I had heard that song until I got this, you know, cause I had only heard that. I was a little bit afraid of the album, to be honest with you. I thought it was dark, associated with murder. And then I was like, all this light hearted, beautiful music that Paul wrote and John, like Julia, you know, that all that stuff reached me later. My association with the record, my association with that record now, or my relationship with it is like, it is the ultimate like home recordist or like manic. I'm a very manic creative person where like, you know, if I start something, I just get into it and all of a sudden I have tunnel vision and I'm just in there and I don't think about like, who is this for? How much money am I spending? Are the kids okay? Who's that calling my name? Why are they calling my name again? Oh shit. Right. You know what I mean? I get very manic and I feel like the White Album is like how many songs are on the record? 30?
God, yeah. I think it's 28, 30. It's 30 somewhere in there.
It's unbelievable. So they were working really hard.
Yeah.
You know, working through the trauma of Brian dying. If I have my timeline correct, I'm pretty sure I do, right?
Yeah.
he died when they were in India, right? Yeah. And then they had to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
And probably, you know, also just correct me if I'm wrong, but all their own shit, like completely separate from Brian, of just like their career thus far.
Yeah.
And also, you know, their childhoods and all, you know, it's not like they were going to therapy. Like how old were they at this time?
27, 28.
Yeah. Like that's a, like.
George was probably 24, 25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be, you know, to grow up varying degrees of poor and parents die. And then all of a sudden you're like thrust into the world as these like superstars and you worked really hard to get there and you wanted it, but then you got it and you're like, holy shit, we didn't know it was going to be this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no precedent for this.
And they were the first group of people to ever experience that.
Yeah.
It didn't exist before them. So
there was no mentor, no someone saying like, hey, you got to mind your P's and Q's and like this, you should do it this way. And like, let's talk, you know, PR, like all of that was like not really a thing.
And in that, And in that way, you know, in that way, it's like everything that he touched couldn't have been done by anybody else at any other time, you know? And I mean, if you really look at anything, it's, that holds true for kind of everything, because the moment is the moment. Yeah. And now it's gone. But I was thinking about, there was these pictures of, this is a little bit of a tangent, but there were these pictures that came online on Instagram or something of McCartney sitting at the drums, recording drums. And there was like six slides in the, and I was so excited, you know, I was like, oh, cool. Linda must've taken them, you know? And I was looking at the mic placement because my drums in the background, can you see?
Yeah.
This is an 87, but I changed the capsule in it. So they changed the some stuff inside of it to make it sound more like a 67. Mm-hmm. And on this, in these photos, there was like, I think five U67s on this drum kit. And, you know, at Abbey Road with Paul McCartney playing drums.
Yeah.
Playing Amazed was the song.
Oh, wow.
Only a few years after the White Album, really, know? And yeah, I was just thinking about us talking today. So my brain shot to I Will, and it's such a strange recording, you know? And if George Martin was there, which he wasn't, if he was there, I think he would have been like, cool, let's get to work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. It's cool. I hear what you guys are doing. Let's be serious.
Yeah.
Let's get to work now.
This Make is this a song. Nice idea. Let's flesh it out.
Yeah,
that's right. That Abbey Road to me sounds like somebody was like, okay, cool. Let's get to work.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Love that record. But I'm just saying the White Album, it's like nobody, you know, when they made Frankenstein, the movie that Carl Laemmle threw down to make Frankenstein, and they didn't really know what would happen, and it became a big hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So his kid, I think the story is his kid took over Universal at the time, right after that, for some whatever reason. But Carl Laemmle had left. He wasn't in the office. He literally, like, his head wasn't in the game. And at that point, they made The Bride of Frankenstein when nobody was looking. So nobody was there to govern them, right? Mm-hmm. No one was there. No, daddy wasn't there to say no, right? And The Bride of Frankenstein is a masterpiece. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
It's unbelievable. It is so crazy cool. It's because nobody was really there to say no.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the album, for me, in the Beatles catalog, more than any other record, it's just, it seems like, Even like, we're going to do a double album. We're going to put every song we worked on. Like, it's like Brian wasn't there to be like, you can't do that.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
And like, you know, you've got John Lennon, Ringo Starr, Paul McCartney showing up at 7 p.m., right, to record I Will, a song that's been kicking around, completely unfinished. And they start recording it. And John's playing, I think they call it like
skulls,
maracas,
I think they called it.
Skulls?
Yeah.
Yeah. In like these maracas. John Lennon.
Yeah.
You know?
Got him doing that.
But he just decides to do that.
Yeah.
It's just strange choices, you know? And I always wondered if that was Paul playing drums, because it really does sound like Paul playing drums on that. But apparently it's Ringo.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, let's dive into it, man. Y'all coming in this week. We're finally there. We're in the top 100.
Oh my God.
Coming in at number 99 is I Will.
Who knows how long I've loved you? You know I love you still. Will I wait a lonely lifetime? If you want me to. Didn't catch your name, but it never really mattered.
99. Wow.
All right.
Wow.
Here we go. While the Beatles were in Rishikesh with the Maharishi, though the intent may have been to delve deeper into meditation and Eastern mysticism, the songwriting Beatles seem to have been unable to turn off the songwriting parts of their brain. Paul, who we all know is kind of the kind of artist who's always creating, always writing, always thinking of music, so much so that George even calls him out on working on so many songs while they're there. As Paul explains in the book many years from now, with George telling him, "We're not fucking here to do the next album. We're here to meditate."
Meditate, you son of a bitch.
Put the smack down on him.
Yeah.
Paul kept returning to a melody and chord progression.
You loser.
Paul kept returning to a melody and chord progression that he'd been playing for some time but had no lyrics for. At some point, he spent a little bit of time with Donovan batting around lyric ideas, which Paul eventually dumped, and they've never seen the light of day except for Paul saying that they, quote, didn't pass muster, and they were mostly just June Moon type lyrics. By the time of the White Album sessions, though, Paul had cracked the code and came up with his own lyrics for the song. As evidenced in a conversation captured during the Get Back sessions, Paul inferred that he'd asked John for some help with the lyrics, but he'd refused to, as he was otherwise occupied with Yoko. And this is Paul's inference, not mine. In his book, The Lyrics, he specifies that though he was with Jane Asher during the time of the song, although he'd already met and started seeing Linda months later around the time when the song was recorded, it wasn't necessarily inspired by Jane or by any specific partner. Paul's quote is, "When I'm writing, it's as if I'm setting words and music to the film I'm watching in my head. It's a declaration of love, yes, but not always to someone specific, unless it's to a person out there who's listening to the song, and they have to be ready for it. It's almost definitely not going to be a person who said, 'There he goes again, writing another of those silly love songs.' So this is me in my troubadour mode." Which Paul just quoted his own song title in this quote.
Had he already written silly love songs when he made this?
This is like in his book, The Lyrics, that came out like 2 years ago. Yeah.
That's like extremely McCartney, though. Right. It's like, yeah. I'm just going to go ahead and drop like one of my own songs in this.
Drop that in there.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Just in case you forgot.
Just in case people forget that I wrote that song.
But so it was on September 16th that Paul, Ringo, and John spent the evening recording I Will, taking some 67 takes to get a keeper, with take 65 being the chosen one, with Paul on acoustic on vocal and Ringo and John on percussion. It should be noted that in those 67 takes, a lot of ad-libbing and clowning around was recorded, including Paul noodling on a melody with the lyric, "Can you take me back where I came from," which ends up tacked onto the transition between Cry Baby Cry and Revolution 9. The following day, additional percussion and guitar was added, as was Paul's bass vocal overdub. The song was released on the White Album in November of 68. It was never performed live by the band, of course, with the exception of Paul, George, and Ringo, performing a brief ukulele-led version of it in the anthology, and it has been included in Paul's live set from time to time throughout the 2000s. So, why is I Will at number 99? This is just one of those songs that shows how unfair it is for one person to be as talented as Paul McCartney. First of all, yeah, the melody on this song is just so good. Every single part of this song is catchy. It's all earworm. It's interesting that there's not really a traditional chorus to it, so essentially the verse melody has to hold the weight of the whole hook, and it does. Then again, the vocal melody on the bridge is also beautiful in its own, and it's got a beautiful harmony that really lifts that part up. It's maybe one of the most natural-sounding vocal moments for Paul as well. He talks about this song being him in troubadour mode, and I can really just picture him walking around the garden in his house or around the ashram in India just effortlessly singing this song. Lyrically, it's amazing how he uses kind of the most simple and almost cliche turns of phrases, especially in the bridge, which is just lyrically so straightforward, but it's all sung so beautifully, it just never comes off as cheap or cliche. This almost feels like a precursor to the McCartney album. It's kind of the lo-fi. The percussion is John just tapping on some blocks like we were talking about, which I read that they were called skulls, which I've never heard of an instrument called skulls, but mm-hmm. I could be mistaken. Ringo on a cymbal and Paul playing rim clicks. Like, that's literally half of the McCartney album percussion is that. Yeah. And then as another weird way to put another hook in the song, Paul essentially comes up with a lead bass part and makes it stand out because instead of playing it on the bass, he sings it. And it actually sounds a whole lot like his Hofner bass with that kind of hollow thud that he has. So it's another thing that catches your attention. On top of a beautiful acoustic little guitar overdub that pops in and out at the end. And he's just crafting all these little pieces that stand out on their own but still never overpower the track as a whole. They always just serve to elevate the song. But it always just seems so effortlessly. It always just seems so effortless with him. It doesn't seem like he's trying at all on this song, but I mean that in the best possible way. This is like a classic McCartney acoustic ballad, and I'm a big, big fan of it. I throw it to you, man. What do you think?
I concur. I'm a big, big fan of this as well. And I think that you're totally spot on about it being a precursor to McCartney, so much so that a funny thing happened, because before I was recording at a session earlier, and I didn't prepare for this discussion, you know, because I'm like, well, I love the song, whatever, and those guys are cool, and I'll just like, but then I had like 20 minutes, so I was like, I'll just go online and just see, like, I'm just whatever, the internet is going to throw me something, and I just couldn't stop reading about it, because you know, it's so fascinating reading about, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
Like, wait a second, that's John Lennon playing percussion? Why? You know, and I was fascinated by that. And I was fascinated that it wasn't all Paul, because it sounds like it's all Paul. It really does feel like I said, you nailed it. It feels like McCartney. It just feels like the, like that. And there's not a lot of kick drum.
Yeah.
It just is like all hands. And I feel like, oh yeah, that was probably an overdub he did to the guitar that he did by himself. You know, and which I've done a million times, and it's hard to do, you know, and it's like he bailed on his foot because he wasn't keeping good time or something, but it was Ringo.
Yeah.
And they made this strange decision to not have any kick. I just, the whole thing is such a mystery to me. And the composition of it is just mind blowing. It's like Yesterday. Mm. It's like the song Yesterday. Whereas it feels like it was delivered to him on a divine platter,
right?
As a finished thing. So you just got to figure out the words, and you know, no, it's not scrambled eggs. Good try. and with I will, it's like, no, don't ask Donovan. Don't ask. Wrong. And Lennon's not going to be any help on this one, you know, and just do the thing where you just channel the exact right lyric for the exact, it's like, could not be any, I am such a huge fan of this composition, you know. And it's funny because, like, love you forever and forever, love you when we're apart, I mean, love you with all my heart. What is it? Love you whenever we're together. Love you when we're apart. That is not just a cliche.
Yeah.
Like, those lyrics are great.
It's great, but it doesn't seem overwrought. Like, it doesn't, you know, some love songs, I think, can have, like, really overthought, overwrought, really, like, complicated composition words. And this just seems like the most basic, simple of language. Like, the simplest sentence. It's to the point.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it says what it wants to say.
Yeah.
It's saying what the melody wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Not somebody's idea of what the melody wanted it to say.
Right.
And that ability to do that, like, for a brief period of time, Paul was so, like, Yesterday is one of those songs. Unbelievable how the lyrics are just inextricable from that melody. In the fact that it was in his hands to do it, it was in his, like, I feel this way about my children, you know, as a parent, I'm like, I'm so lucky that I'm the one that gets to help these people become adults. You know what I mean? I'm so lucky, and I take it so seriously. And I feel that way about songs when, like, a divine idea comes to me. Like, it really does feel like, like, the best ones feel like, oh my God, you know, you channel it, you know. And McCartney was the channeler of I Will, you know, and what a responsibility to be in India, walking around barefoot, and all these other songs are flying around that ended up on the White Album too. What a responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't screw it up. He McEnroe'd it or whatever. I'm not a big sports fan. He didn't screw up. He Kobe Bryant, you know, he did it. He just, like, an athlete. He just, like, nailed it.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So in other words, I guess what I'm saying is there are songs he didn't nail, but I still love, but like, you know, a bunch of stuff off McCartney's solo album, which was to come, or even songs on Let It Be, I don't think are great.
Sure.
But compositionally speaking, like getting nerdy about that and, but like, yeah, he had a major responsibility not to screw that melody, not to screw the lyric up, because he had the melody already,
mm-hmm.
just like yesterday, you know, and he delivered.
Yeah, for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Julia, what you thinking?
Yeah, the song is, it's stupid. Like, it has no right to be this good.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, like, yeah. I'm not a musician, so I can't sort of evaluate it from the standpoint of a musician, but it feels just like, to me, it feels very simple. Like, it's not fussy. There's not a whole lot going on. Like you said, it's just like wood blocks, some a little yeah. rim tapping, a little bit of guitar, a little yeah. mouth bass, and yeah. some vocals. And like, that's it. You're done. Wrap it up. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be this good. It shouldn't be as good as it is, but
yeah.
McCartney has channeled divine songwriting, and
he
nailed it. Like, it's just so lovely. Like, it really makes me want to, like, sort of like put my chin in my hands and like look at you with like little cartoon hard eyes, just like
yeah.
Like, that's it's the song version of like cartoon hard eyes, like,
oh yeah. Yeah, 100%.
That's like all I can think about when I listen to it. It's just like so sweet. I imagine this being like number 99.
Like, right. What kind of asshole puts 99?
How is this? But there's still so much good to come. I don't know. It's absolutely lovely. No notes.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering if I have this way too loud. This song, I was thinking as we were talking, I don't know why this popped in my head, just in the idea of like saying the most with the least amount of fuss and words, you know?
Mm.
Like, someone turned me on to like Raymond Carver as a writer who's really good at saying a ton with the most simplest of language. He
really is a master at that. Yeah.
And it's like, think of like the simplicity of love me do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So please love me do. That is like the 5-year-old version of what he's essentially saying in I Will.
Hmm.
Like, this is the still incredibly simple, but just way smarter version
mm-hmm.
of that, you know?
Or maybe more mature, you know?
Yeah. More mature, yeah. And still not saying much else, you know?
Yeah. I mean, lovely for Love Me Do. He probably wasn't even in a relationship.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah. I mean,
probably. Didn't really know. But another thing about the tune, which is the recording, right? The take.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 67 takes, what that really means is that the Beatles were so famous and so iconic already in the midst of their being, they were a band, but they were iconic already. And they would just record everything.
Yeah.
We're just going to record everything. That's unheard of. Like, people record over stuff all the time. You roll back, you record over it. Everything was a virgin take with them, which is wild. There's reams of tape, right? But so take 67 probably means like, I don't know, like they probably went through it 12 times, 15 times, you know what I mean? And all those other things were false starts and weird jams and stuff. But what I was going to say was like, but the take, like, they're goofing around, they're doing, you know, can you take me back where I came from, that song, and they're doing Blue Moon and all these other songs they were jamming on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he was able to stay in the headspace of that Paul McCartney, like that voice he has on that song. Because it's different than the Helter Skelter voice.
Oh God, yeah. Mm.
It's different than the why don't we do it in the road voice, right? So it's like a real gentle, who knows? Oh, it's really resonant, you know. Mm. Oh. Mm-hmm. But like you're joking around with your pals and it's 3 a.m.
Yeah.
It's 3 a.m. Like, I think that's when they got it.
Yeah.
Or that's when the session wrapped. But it's like, it's bananas that they were able, such an accomplished recordist, but he's only been doing it for 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
So it's the whole thing is just so strange and really fun to talk about. But I find that when I talk about stuff like this, like my heart gets away from my head. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just so eager to just express like, oh my God, I have this theory. And then the theory's like, you know, because as it's leaving my mouth, I'm like, you don't know that because wait a second, you know, but as a recordist, right. As a musician, someone who loves making records and someone who's super manic about their creativity, like I do know that like I could do take 13 and I'll be doing that and my voice will sound really good and I'll be resonant and everything's right where it should be, but there'll be like a little screw up. So I'll rewind and I'll do number 14 and it's gone.
Yeah.
The thing that was good is gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somehow, like 67 takes later, it's just wild to me how that's some wild stuff. Have you ever listened to like the other takes of Blackbird, for instance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's bizarre because it's like, that's so not the take.
Yeah.
Not because he screws up. But it's the headspace he's in, you know, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. It's just like when I'm producing records and I have my producer hat on, this is what I try and get out of artists. And only like somebody objective can really identify,
mm-hmm.
Which is that headspace, that ingredient X, you know, the singer is delivering, that's reaching the listener's ears, you know? And, I wonder if it was, I mean, Lennon, and just based on all the Get Back footage we've seen and things we've read, he just seemed like he was always joking around and was never like, bro, good. You nailed it. You're
Killer.
So good, Paul. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think it was just like, can we leave now? Like it was... I think that might be why you get such crystallized lyrics, like some of the lyrics that we get mm-hmm. from the Beatles. Like it was just like, you know, it's like when in the Get Back stuff, sorry, I'm off on tangents, but whatever, mm-hmm. but like in the Get Back movie, when Harrison's writing something,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's asking them for words. Is it something he's writing?
Yeah.
He's asking them for lyric ideas, and they're both just like, just whatever comes to your head, man. Why are you wasting your time on this?
attracts me like a cauliflower.
Whatever. Just rhyme. Get it done.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to learn from that as a creator and as a person finishing their day.
Yeah.
And just finish the day, dude. Just get it done, you know, and go with love, because that's the Beatles always went with love, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get it finished and get a good lawyer, because you're going to get sued. Your best friend.
Oh, goodness.
Truth. Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
What a mess that all is.
I have one little McCartney tangent, but I promise you can edit this out.
No, dude, you got good tangents.
Have you read I call it the Red Book. It's a Paul McCartney chronology. Have you read this book?
Uh-uh.
Oh, dude. It is so good.
Is this the newer one that just came out?
Came out last year. And
McCartney Legacy or something like that. The McCartney Legacy, maybe?
Maybe it's not called Chronicles. Am I botching that? It could be called Legacy.
I think it's the Legacy.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. It's so good because it's just, he doesn't interview McCartney. It's all paper trail. So it's like he says where he was here, and then but he goes into how he tracks some of these songs and what takes and things like that, and it's really, really, really fascinating. And I wish they would just do that with the Beatles too, like do paper trail books.
Yeah,
don't interview. I don't care. Like I love, you know, I'm not gonna. Whatever. I love modern performers. I love modern music, but I really don't care what they think about the Beatles. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm reading the book, if you're listening to a podcast like yours, of course I care. But if I'm reading a book about it and it's like this tome, you know what I mean? I just want to hear what the Beatles. That's why Get Back, the movie was so incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You must have lost your mind when that came out.
Oh God, dude. Like, I think I've watched it in full, I think 3 or 4 times, which is a lot of hours to spend watching that. A
lot of hours.
I feel like when it came out, you were like, okay, it goes live at 6 p.m. So we've got to leave where we are by 5, get home, have drinks, potty, soft clothes, and be on the couch by, like, whatever the time was. You had to, like, play it out. You were like, as soon as it's available, we're turning it on. I'm
like,
okay.
I
think it was Thanksgiving.
Was it Thanksgiving?
I think it was Thanksgiving. Yeah. Thanksgiving of 2020. What a gift for Thanksgiving of 2020. Like,
wait, it was 2020?
No, it was 2021. Wow. It was 21.
2021, because we were out of... Because I was going to say, I was in the studio making the Panic at the Disco record. We were at United Studios, which is this historic Frank Sinatra-built kind of studio. And Studio A, which is massive orchestral room that we didn't need. We had finished the record in this little studio, to be honest with you, on my little... My little 8-track machine, nice. But we did. I mean, the bulk of the record's there, but we wanted to do orchestration and we wanted to hang out at that studio, basically. And we were there for the whole month of November. We locked it out and we knew Get Back was coming out. So Jake Sinclair, the co-producer that I work with, he brought in this huge projector and he brought in he shipped it, 2 massive leather couches, these huge JBL speakers, and we sat in the main room. There was no other gear. There was no microphones were plugged in. We were just like, walk and Get Back. It was amazing.
Dude, that's awesome.
Here's the best thing. Here's the best thing ever. So,
and I assume that Panic's label footed the bill for that.
Yep.
Attaboy. Well done.
But that, we did tons of work in this room that really just.
And the record did well. It's all fine.
It was research. Yeah, it's totally an expense.
It was the best time we ever spent. We had a skateboard route. We were skateboarding around the whole. It was so much fun. Oh my God.
Amazing.
That's awesome.
That movie became my life for a good few months.
Yeah, for sure. All it makes me want to do is see, you know, what else they have in the vaults now, especially with that video. Yeah. Now it's like, oh, wait, you have all this footage of them recording the anthology songs. Let's see all of that, please. Like, empty all the vaults. Give it all to me. I want all of it.
Yeah. I know. I mean, soon. It's all, they'll meet it out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the cash grab. Just keep that cash grab.
Yep.
It's going to keep rolling down the tracks.
Well, at 99 out of 223, do we think I'm off base, on target? What are y'all thinking? I'm kind of thinking I might be a little low. I feel like this should be a little bit closer. I don't know.
You think you're a little high, it should be lower.
I think I'm high. I think it should be lower.
Yeah.
Like maybe in the 70, maybe 75-ish. Mm. I really love this song. I've really grown to love this song.
I think you might have.
You're the crazy bastard that like came up with the idea to rank them.
Right.
It's a terrible idea. You're just instigating fights around the world.
That's what drinking during a pandemic will do.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a great idea. And you might be far away. I'm excited to find out what's going to be earlier.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm. All right. What you think?
I think it might be a little high.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I might be with you. Like I would move it I would move it a little bit lower.
Okay.
It's just so lovely.
It is.
It's, and like, we didn't even touch on this all. Like, it's just such a lovely vocal performance. Yeah. Like, it's like, you, I think you said, it's like so pure. Like, there's not that like power. Like you said, there, it's not like Helter Skelter. It's not that like power vocal. Yeah. It's not the sort of little bit of playfulness like in Blackbird. Like, it's just so pure and simple. And like, I don't know. Like, there's.
It's one of those things.
It matches the song. Yeah. Like, it feels just very honest.
We play it in I have a Beatles cover band here in town. We play this. Our bass player will sing it, and I'm doing the bass part. And then I'll do the harmony and the bridge. And it's just so nice to sing those two parts together. Like, you know, just that joy you get when you sing with somebody and, like, you just hit a really nice, you link up perfectly on something and just you feel that feeling that you get. Like, every time we sing that, it's that part that just, like, kills me. I love that. I absolutely love singing that part.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's one of the best, like, gifts of being a human being. It's harmonizing with somebody is just such a special thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see when I have to reapproach everything towards the end of this.
The great re-ranking. Around
in the great re-ranking. We'll see what happens.
Well, great re-ranking.
Before we let you go for the day, can I throw a few rapid fire questions at you?
Sure.
Okay. And I've only got three on this. I think we did five last time, but I've only got three. Your favorite Paul acoustic song?
Wow. It's not very rapid fire, was it?
They're never rapid fire. That's right.
I mean, it's really between three songs. So I'm just trying to decide. Performance or the song?
Ooh.
Did you ask, or maybe you didn't ask? Or...
I didn't ask, but if you have one for each, I'll take both.
Okay. I would say probably my favorite acoustic is probably Mother Nature's Son.
Mm, yeah.
I love that part. Is incredible. I love it. And maybe as a song, I think I love Blackbird.
Yeah.
It's like one of those songs, like there's one song in the world. Well, not true, but like there's one at the time, there was one song that did that, that everybody knew.
Yeah.
That pedaled like that with that kind of strumming. And he got it from Bach. I don't know if you've talked about Blackbird yet. But
not yet, no.
That all came from Bach.
I think I'd have been flogged if I had Blackbird on this list already.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Your favorite White Album song. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's it. I'm done.
Okay. Favorite White Album song. Yeah.
Martha, My Dear.
Yes.
Boo.
She's not a fan of that song, so man.
I know. You don't like Your Mother Should Know either.
I don't know that I would say that.
I thought you poo-pooed that one too.
I think you poo-pooed it a little bit. Yeah.
Did I? I mean, it's definitely not like one of my favorites. There's just like
all over it.
Sorry.
Maybe out,
I
did. Man.
Yeah. I honestly, like, once we record these episodes, the facts go out of my head. I remember nothing. It's like a constant amnesia about this podcast. I'm like, I say things and I'm like, okay, we're done. Moving on.
With the Beatles.
10 o'clock. Well, who the fuck Beatles?
Martha, My Dear, mostly because it's another one of those songs. Like, nothing else exists like that. Like, the counterpoint between his, he didn't do that ever again.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's almost like, oh, he didn't actually do that. He hired someone to do it and he didn't write it either. Like, it's so strange.
But then that was one of my favorite things to get back was watching him play that. Because there's that scene where he's showing just a tech guy that's working, you know, on the film crew, how he composed it. And I was just like, wow, that's incredible to watch.
Yeah. Ridiculous. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah.
But like, so that's my favorite. But I love the arrangement. George Martin's arrangement on that. And it's just everything about that. I love that song.
Yeah.
I love that all the Beatles on it. Like, it bothers me that they're not all on I Will.
Yeah.
That bothers, or Blackbird and stuff, or whatever, but.
Yeah. Name if not one, two songs you're definitely cutting from the White Album if you have to.
Ooh, cutting from the White Album.
Yeah, because there's always the great debate about should it have been a single album, blah, blah, blah. I think it's great as is. But gun to your head, if you got to cut two songs, what are you cutting?
I mean, I don't know if I could. Honestly, I feel like it's complete.
Yeah.
I mean, my two least favorite songs might be Savoy Truffle.
Mm-hmm.
I think Georgia's songs, actually. Savoy Truffle. And what's the other one that I'm not a huge fan of? Oh, the Don't Pass Me By.
Oh, yeah.
Ringo song.
That one gets...
I'm not a huge fan of that one.
Yeah.
But when it comes on, I'm like, yes! So I think it's... You know, I grew up with the faith that like every Beatles song is great.
Yeah.
And just because they thought so, you know, like, I grew up with that. So I really do feel that way. I love them all. I love everything about it.
Yeah. Fantastic. Mike, man, this has been a pleasure, man. So thanks so much for coming back and doing this again. Paul McCartney is out. There's a new record next year. Winter tour starts in January or February?
February. Yep.
Excellent. And tickets available through your website, I'm guessing?
Yep. Everything's on my website or StubHub and Bands in Town, places like that, whatever.
Sweet. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, man, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to get to chat music with you again, and I'm so glad to see everything's going so well for you these days.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Really great to see you guys.
Likewise. And
so great to see
99
you.
More. So let me know as we get to the top of the list. If you want to come back, we'll do it again.
Absolutely. We'll do it on the next record, The Rock of Boston, which is coming out next year.
Yes.
So let's do it again next year.
I love it, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, you guys.
All right. Mike Viola, y'all. What a good time. Oh, man, that was fun. I like chatting music with him. I feel like, you know, it's fun when you meet somebody who I feel like is just as nerdy about music stuff as I am. At least I find it fun. I don't know if you do, but
I love when we have musicians on the show. I'm just kidding. No, I really do. But it's funny because you get to like talk about all these like very nuanced things, and I'm just like, oh, that's interesting. Like I don't always completely understand it, but I think I get the gist.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you do great.
But I make my little jokes like when you and Mary are talking about specific notes or something, and I'm like, oh yeah, totally unexpected.
That's like when Mike was talking about the U87s and U67 mics. I'm like, Julia knows what we're talking about now.
I know exactly what you mean. Just,
yeah,
gotta get that sweet 67 sound.
The U67's a great mic, as is the U87.
I don't know.
Done a lot of recording on U67.
Oh, that's nice.
Friends, what do y'all think about I Will at number 99? I don't know about this one. Are we too high? Are we too low? Or just like Baby Bear's porridge, is it?
Just right.
I don't think it is. Let us know what you think. Wherever you listen to us, wherever you're following along, let us know your thoughts. If you're following us on Facebook, you can find us at...
Ranking the Beatles.
If you're looking for us on Instagram, you can find us at...
Ranking Beatles. No. Am I wrong? Oh, no!
If you're looking for us on Instagram, you can find us at...
Ranking the Beatles.
Yes, and if you're looking for us on Twitter, we are at...
Ranking Beatles.
That's right. Be sure to check out Mike's most recent record, Paul McCartney. It is fantastic, as is the previous record before that, God Muffin. As is the previous one before that, and the previous one before that. All his stuff is great.
Yep. I celebrate the man's entire catalog.
Pretty much. Make sure you check out rankingthebeatles.com. Grab yourself a Rank Your Own Beatles poster or a t-shirt or a jumper or a hoodie, whatever you like. And be sure to tell all your friends what we're doing. We're having a whole lot of fun over here. Ranking Beatles for all you beautiful people. And if you're enjoying it, you can either leave us a 5-star review or however many stars you can possibly leave on your podcast provider of choice. Or if you're really digging it, you can buy us a coffee at rankingthebeatles.com.
We love coffee.
We love a coffee. We just got a couple of coffees recently. Thank
Thanks,
you
friends.
All who have put some shekels in the coffers for us. We do appreciate it.
The coffee coffers?
The coffee coffers.
That's so bad. Yeah. Sorry. I apologize.
All right. You're done for the day.
Thank you.
Y'all, this is it. This is all we got for you this week. Until the next one, I am Jonathan.
And I'm Julia.
This has been Ranking the Beatles. Adios.
Bye, y'all.